Ladies and gentlemen, distinguished audience, this statement in the title is undoubtedly true. We would like to inquire about, you know, the reasons and the evolutionary paths and causes how this could be true. If you look at this network, this is the metabolic flow chart of a contemporary cell. If you look at it, it looks like a complete mess. It's absolutely not obvious what is the order in such a system, whether you could realize the same system with 5,000 reactions, 400 reactions, anything in between, and so on. I mean, one answer for the question, how can you tackle such a system, could be the following. Just wait for contemporary bioinformatics. Just collect data, and finally, with huge computers and huge databases, you can very much practically run the system in silico by brute force. What I am going to convince you about, I hope that this is not cannot be the full answer. One of the reasons why it cannot be the full answer is that these systems that you see there are the result of roughly half a billion years of evolution. There must have been something in between, both logically, historically, and organizationally. And then, of course, the contemporary systems give you only very limited information about that. So one of the questions that you can ask, if you look into the mess that I have shown you, you see, for example, this system. This is the well-known Krebs cycle. You can immediately ask the question, I mean, what is the reason that you find cycles in metabolic systems, for example? What are they good for? What are they doing for you? Could you run a system, a metabolic system, without cycles or not? So these are the questions that you are not going to get an answer by brute force. You need hard thinking in order to elucidate these questions. Of course, deep thinking about biological organisms goes back a long way. Some of the most eminent people who were thinking about foundational issues of life include Aristotle, Leibniz, Schrödinger. But if you want to go into the fairly recent past, then I would actually maintain that it is these four men on this slide who have been the deepest and hardest thinkers of what constitutes, from a chemical point of view, a living system. Now, of course, immediately molecular biology will come to your mind. And you know, more than a dozen Nobel Prizes were spent on molecular biology, and rightly so. But again, you can figure out that this cannot be the complete picture. This cannot be the complete picture because the items that molecular biology is dealing with has something like ribosomes, enzymes, and so on, and these must have been the result of, again, of at least half a billion years of evolution. So you cannot begin with them. If you cannot begin with them, what is there in between from a conceptual point of view? And again, I state that these people have thought harder than anybody else whom I know about this problem. Practically all of them had an idiosyncratic life, as far as I can tell, all of them have been very difficult people. Part of the reason probably was that they were really dealing with very difficult problems, and they had a very idiosyncratic view at the time when this kind of reasoning was not fashionable. If you make an analysis in terms of citations, you will see that the citations of these people are actually increasing exponentially right now. It was not the case 30 years ago. Hardly anybody listened. This tells you actually something about the development of science. It's not straightforward and easy even today. This is what I'm going to, what I would like to say. Stuart Kaufman is still with us and still going strong. He is around 70 now. Now, Robert Rosen, when he was thinking about the foundational issues of life, what would constitute a minimal organism, he realized something which is long-lasting and extremely important. First of all, he made the distinction between material causation, which is a chemical transformation, and efficient causation, catalysis. This is why I say that it goes back to Aristotle in this kind of thinking, but he makes this very clear distinction, and then he makes a very bold statement. The bold statement meaning that a living system must be close to efficient causation. Now, if a living system is close to efficient causation, then immediately you will figure out that there is a network of interactions, and the network maintains itself, and the different components, the different catalysts that are active in the cell are catalyzing reactions, so that by the virtue of the material causes, the whole network is being maintained. Normally, these catalysts are inside the cell, so therefore the normal situation is that indeed the cell is close to efficient causation. Now, if you, however, look at in detail about on the arrows that Robert Rosen posited, then you will see that, in fact, his famous MR system rendering, which is here, and this is another rendering where I attempted to see, according to his description, what connects to whom in relation to material and efficient causes. It's actually very interesting. It doesn't make any sense if you know molecular biology. This is not how cells operate. So there is a very interesting distinction here. Rosen had a fundamental insight about the organization of life. That's the closure to efficient causation. But any concrete rendering he has produced I know of is actually, well, to put a polite word, nonsense. But you also can figure out something which is very important from Rosen. You know, enzymes are catalyzing reactions, and ultimately, because it is close to efficient causation, the system must be able to catalyze its own formation. So it must be autocatalytic. It catalyzes its own formation, and since there are many components interacting, there must be reflexive autocatalysis. The system as a whole must be autocatalytic, even if you can single out individual species that are autocatalytic within the system, embedded in the system. If you follow this reasoning, you can actually ponder about the organizational properties of interim stages in evolution. As I told you, contemporary cells are far too complex to have originated directly from chemistry. If it's the case, there must have been interim stages of evolution. For example, the RNA world. In the RNA world, it was RNA that is presumed to have done everything, not only genetics, but also enzymatic functions. And on the right, you have seen my rendering what the basic structure of a protocell in the RNA world would have looked like. I adopt the notation of Rosen of efficient and material causes. But again, you see that it doesn't correspond to the canonical formulation of Rosen. But the fact that this has to be a system that is close to efficient causation, that's actually valid. And this is our contemporary world. It's more elaborate, of course, because proteins are also playing an indispensable role. Again, the two diagrams actually don't match with each other. Now, a related concept coming from Francisco Varela is the concept of autopoiesis, that you are basically creating yourself. That is what it means. And here is a rendering by the chemist Robert Luigi Luisi. The main point is being here that biological organizations produce their own boundaries, and those boundaries have a causative effect on the organization of the system itself. It's very easy to accept it once you see it, but somebody has to say it. Interestingly, this guy was more influential in the social domain. So, for example, if you Google now for the term autopoiesis, you will see that you will see more references to the idea of autopoiesis in social sciences than in the domain that it was originally suggested. But again, the idea that the system must construct itself and the causative agent must be within the system is there. Here is the third one. This is from the man who is still with us. This is Hugh Kaufmann. And this is about the autocatalytic sets of the Kaufmann type. Let me explain this a little bit in detail, because this is quite involved. In contemporary cells, the information that is primarily stored is in nucleic acid, either DNA or RNA, as you know, and they are sequencing and whatever, genome projects and so on and so forth. But again, this is probably a late development, so there could have been an intermediate stage where there were lifelike networks, but those networks are a different type of organization. Here is one. This is a theoretical construct for the time being. So here are very simple building blocks, call them amino acids. And the amino acids, under the right conditions, that is actually experimentally true, can form oligopeptides and polypeptides. The longer the string here, the longer the molecule. Right? Now, we also know that a fraction of those molecules is going to have catalytic activity. And among those catalytic activities, there will be a fraction which will catalyze one of the reactions leading to some of the constituents of the network itself. So we have a very interesting problem. Can you imagine a large network? It looks like a mess, right? Can you imagine a large network where it is true that although none of the individual components is autocatalytic, but for every component the system, there is a pathway, which pathway is catalyzed by some other components in the system. Now, this system as such will be collectively autocatalytic. Nobody replicates individually, but the network as such has a replicator property. This is a kind of percolation problem, the physicists would call it, because of course, if the chance of a catalytic reaction is too low, you are not going to have this organizational closure. The Kaufmann network is also caused in the end, is also close to efficient causation, so it follows in that sense the Rosen picture, but it's a very specific suggestion. Of course, one of the questions that you can ask, is such a system as evolvable? Now, this is a very important distinction for biology, because you can posit organizations that with which you can actually get stuck. You cannot go out of the system by Darwinian evolution. And this was one of the suspicions that such systems are not evolvable. Nucleic acid-based life is evolvable, as you know, but is this evolvable without template copying of genetic information? It's interesting that just now our paper will come out in a few weeks, which shows that this system has limited evolvability. This is counterintuitive, but only if you put them into reproducing compartments. So this picture has to be combined with this picture here. So if inside the metabolism is replaced by something like this, then in the population of those protocells, evolution by natural selection can take place to a limited extent, but limited is better than nothing, right? So it possibly, conceivably, could bridge the gap between contemporary nucleic acid-based life and chemical mayhem. This is just another rendering of that. Now we come to the fourth issue, and this is a very interesting moment here, because the originator of these particular ideas happened to live and work in this country. In 1966, Tibor Ganti published the first book on molecular biology, and in the final chapter, he asked the question, yes, this is spectacular, but is it really sufficient? And he figures out that it cannot be, for the reasons that I mentioned at the beginning in the introduction. It cannot be sufficient because of logical and evolutionary reasons. And then in 1971, he comes out with the central ideas, and the central ideas and many ramifications are then republished by Oxford University Press on the right in 2003 as new science, right? I mean, look at the dates. 30 years of work is published by Oxford University Press as new science in 2003, although the basic ideas were conceived in 1971. So Ganti says that ultimately you need an abstraction of what a chemical system is which can be called justifiably alive. And he says that basically it's three types of qualitatively different autocatalytic systems. There is a metabolic engine, and this already goes back to our question, why do you have cycles in metabolic systems? This is an engine that can repeatedly transform material X to material Y, you know, food and waste, and at the expense of the difference between the two, it is producing raw material for this cycle here, which is template replication. It's like nucleic acid replication. And you have a boundary system. The boundary system is also autocatalytic because it attracts the molecules that build up the membrane. And since all of these are autocatalytic, look at this. This is also reproducing here at the molecular level. The system as a whole is also autocatalytic at the level of the system. So this conceptualization of basic chemical but living systems was called the chemoton. And here is another exposition of the same idea, that certain chemical systems, when appropriately united, and these are all network-based systems, is going to give you a higher level networks, and that network property is actually what we call living. I also would like to stress that there is a new science, new discipline here, which is called systems chemistry. Systems chemistry is now a very vigorous cost action, and if we are talking about science, cost is an extremely good means to facilitate European scientific development, and it was Günther von Kidrowski, the famous chemist, and myself, who then called this action into existence, and this system is actually now running and very much alive, and it follows this kind of prescription that goes back several decades ago. So how can you experimentally, in the end, synthesize systems that have life-like properties? Here is a concrete chemical experiment by Günther von Kidrowski in 1986. This system looks like nucleic acid replication. It's actually a piece of a nucleic acid, but in fact, it does not need enzymes for the replication. This is the critical element of systems chemistry. How much of the gimmicks of life can you do without evolved enzymes? Because using enzymes is like cheating. Enzymes must have come late, so the chemical organization that you are interested in must be in somewhere in between. So this is a system that is experimentally running and without enzymes. Here is another one. This goes a little bit in the direction of the Kaufman networks. The different bars there are either long polypeptides or shorter oligopeptides. And if you look at the reactions, then you will see that the system is cross-catalytic because this guy in its cycle produces a copy of the other guy that is here and so on, and the system as a whole is mutually autocatalytic. None of the individual members in this sense, in this particular example, is autocatalytic, but the system as a whole is autocatalytic, and it's built of proteins, right? There is no nucleic acid involved. This is an experimental result again. Here is a result which goes back a long way, and there is an applause because this was the masterpiece of chemistry in 1861 by Butlerov. Look at this chemical reaction. This is glycolaldehyde, and then this glycolaldehyde takes up a molecular form of formaldehyde. There is some interconversion. Another molecular formaldehyde is taken up, and look at this step. It splits into two molecules, and these two molecules then, almost by miracle, are identical with the initial molecule of glycolaldehyde. This is a system that is running without enzymes. This is a chemical self-reproducing system. And this is the kind of system that could form the metabolic foundations of an early system which doesn't need the activity of enzymes. In fact, there is a guy called Davis who just in Nature Chemistry a few months ago has put the foremost reaction into the context of a membrane vesicle. This vesicle does not grow yet, but there is the potential that it will grow. And then, if that's the case, we will actually be able to fulfill the research program of systems chemistry. So here are the elementary chemical systems that you can play with. This is the combinatorics at the level of the doublets. Membrane, boundary, membrane, template, boundary, and template. I call these infrabiological systems because these are not biological yet, but highly exciting already. They have a lot about biology already, despite the fact that they do not have this holy trinity where the membrane, the boundary, and the template would be acting together. The point is that this is now under heavy experimental and theoretical scrutiny, and it might actually take two more decades, and people are going to experimentally realize the systems, and if they are going to do that, it can be said ultimately that systems chemistry has really achieved its goal, and also it will lead to a much deeper understanding of the basic chemical organization of life, and also it would give us hints how life could have originated on the Earth. Thank you for your attention.